right, welcome back to our members segment here, the second hour, together with Joseph P. Farrell. And we are talking about Babylon's Banksters, the Philosopher's Stone, the Nazi International, and many other of his books here as well, of course. I guess I would like to return to that question that we asked a bit earlier as well, in terms of what they need all the money for. If we look at the Philosopher's Stone, that particular book, you describe basically three different aspects of, the alchemical aspects to all of this as well. You talk about the American gold, the monatomic gold, of David Hudson, Soviet mercury, or the red mercury of the nuclear scare. Then we have the Nazi serum, the high-spin state of the mercury that was developed together with the Nazi bell, basically. Three different elements. All of these kind of imply that there is a different kind of science going on, a more occult alchemical science that are happening.
Yes.
Is anything in the world that we can see today involved in any of this kind of work as well? If we put this into the perspective of many of the large scientific, machines and experiments that are happening out there, we could, for instance, bring up CERN, obviously.
Oh, boy.
there's tons of these interesting, there is another laser project happening in California. I think there's basically, there's so many different things happening and going on. What is that? Is the Babylon's Banksters involved in any of these, do you think, Joseph?
Oh boy, Henry, quite a great question. And it really opens up a Pandora's box. Let's begin to answer that question with something that I said in the first hour, in that we are looking at the breakdown of that detente, all right? Mm. I believe that this is the case because I believe that it has become an actual, although very covert and carefully disguised, shooting war, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And let me point to recent events and point out certain obvious things about them that people may not really have thought about. Let's begin with the earthquake in Haiti.
Yeah.
All right. Here we have a miserably poor nation to begin with that experienced this huge earthquake. Yet, to my knowledge, there has not been any talk about seismic signatures in the neighboring Dominican Republic. And an earthquake that huge should have sent some sort of tsunami, or at least an increased shockwave in water table rise along the American coast, Cuba, and so on. None of this happened, Henrik. Then you had the earthquake in Chile near Parral, I think it was.
Yeah.
And again, this was an absolutely huge earthquake that should have sent shockwaves. And in fact, the news did cover the fact that in Hawaii and in Australia and New Zealand and Japan, the governments there were making preparations for tsunami warnings, all right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yet, what happened in Hawaii? Well, we got a whole whopping 2-foot surge. Okay. You know, this is hardly a tsunami. No. It's not even a good high tide.
Right.
So in other words, what we're looking at, I believe, and I'm crawling way out on a limb here, what we're looking at, I believe, is the display of a technology that was in play to damp the inertial effects or after effects of those earthquakes. In other words, we're looking at the fact that the earthquakes themselves may have been products of a technological and deliberate thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In other words, people are shooting at each other. Now, I think if you look at Haiti, it's very obvious who's doing the shooting. It's this post-war international fascist organization, whatever you want to call it. And if you look at the Chile earthquake in Parral, you're looking at the Anglo-American elite shooting back, because that region of Chile just so happens to be a region where there is a heavy concentration of surviving post-war Nazis.
Okay.
All right?
Yeah.
Now, let's go a little step further. everybody there in Europe probably remembers the Norway spiral.
Yeah, I was just going to bring that up. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, well, this thing that mysteriously appeared over the skies of northern Norway, Sweden, and Finland that, you know, everybody up there saw, they took pictures of, and it just so happened to appear there right at the time that the Russians were testing one of their missiles. The Russians had let everybody know, as they always do, that, you know, this is not an incoming ICBM. We're just shooting off a missile to test it, okay? Mm-hmm. So the Russians were testing this new missile, which flies in and hits this whatever it was that appeared over northern Scandinavia,
yeah.
And the missile basically is fried. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if we look at the current German chancellor, Chancellor Merkel,
yeah.
All right, look carefully at what she is. She is, first of all, the first Christian Democratic Union chancellor of reunified Germany since Chancellor Kohl.
That's right.
All right.
Yeah.
She is also a PhD in quantum chemistry.
That's interesting. You know?
And the Germans don't just hand out PhDs in any subject, much less quantum chemistry.
Yeah.
You know, so in other words, this lady is a first-rate scientist, which is very, very strange that she would be chancellor when this Norway spiral thing is fired up and when CERN fires up that Large Hadron Collider. We'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, she, as much as basically told President Bush and President Obama that, as far as Germany is concerned, we don't need your missile defense shield. Now, the question is, why?
Mm.
Why would any German chancellor refuse to go along with a defense shield for Europe and for Germany when it's offered, basically, that technology on a platter, unless it already has it?
Yeah, I see.
Now, it just so happens that, you know, while the HAARP-like project that is there I believe, outside of Trondheim, Norway. While that is largely a European Union concern.
You're talking about the ICECAT facility?
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
It's basically Europe's version.
That's right.
Of the HAARP project in Gakona, Alaska, all right?
That's right.
So, in other words, you're looking at the same thing, all right? Now, if you look at the patents for HAARP, you can go online or look up the patents of Bernard Eastland. And one of the things that he specifically mentions in his patents for HAARP is that this thing can function as a missile defense shield.
Mm.
Okay? Now, if you look at the European version of it, which country has the majority of interest in that project?
I think it is Germany, right, isn't it?
Germany.
Right.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
So in other words, when Chancellor Merkel comes out and says, well, we don't need your silly defense shield, she means it. She's got one.
Yeah.
And they tested it on a Russian missile. That's what I'm telling you.
Hmm.
That's exactly what that was. That was, and incidentally, if you check the records for that project there, that project was actually being fired off at the time that spiral appeared and took out that Russian missile.
Hmm.
So, in other words, again, I think you're dealing with messages being sent.
Hmm. So
you're dealing with messages being sent.
Yeah, and so that means that a certain, you know, group here are they're fighting with each other and kind of just showing off some of their
precisely
the stuff that they got, the gear that they have, so forth as well.
Precisely.
What
and you know, let me get to CERN.
That's right.
CERN, the Large Hadron Collider there, we are told that when they fired off this thing, that they got some sort of reaction to it, and it punched a hole in the helium cooling tanks, the liquid helium cooling tanks around these big magnets, all right, and that the heat began to rise, they had to shut the thing down, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's speculation going on out there that they are looking for the Higgs boson, they're looking for the creation of what are called strangelets within the standard model of quantum mechanics and so on and so forth. And there's all sorts of hysteria about what had happened. And some people are even speculating that they actually created a mini black hole, and that's what punched that hole into the coolant around those magnets.
Mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to crawl way out on a limb here, Henrik, and give my own read of what happened there.
Okay.
The rationalizations for what happened that you read on the internet are all being based upon the standard model in physics.
That's right.
All right?
Yeah.
The standard model within quantum mechanics. I suspect that when they turned that thing on, they got an effect that they, on the standard model of physics, never even dreamed was possible. Why? Because look what you have with that collider. You've got two immensely huge counter-rotating magnets. And that should, for your listeners, sound very familiar. Because what did the Bell device have in it? It had counter-rotating cylinders that were under extreme electrical stress within a static electrical field that were being pulsed, right?
And was that to hold the mercury as well?
That was to hold and spin up to cohere the plane of spin of that Serum 525 that
right.
they put into the Bell device.
Yeah.
So you're looking at the same construction, the same principle of construction. But in the case of the Bell device, the Nazis had rationalized that around the principles of torsion physics, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And torsion physics, if you read any standard physics model, that is not even in view in quantum mechanics, and it's certainly not in view within general relativity.
Mm.
Okay?
Mm.
But again, we have to remember that Einstein himself was not satisfied with general relativity and had incorporated torsion into his very first unified field publications papers beginning in 1925. So what I think happened is they fired that thing up, but they got an effect, a result, that was entirely outside of the expected predictions within the standard model of physics.
Mm.
And that sent them packing right back to the drawing board. And I strongly suspect that with such a heavy German and French role in that project, and with the fact that you have, in those two countries in particular, a group of physicists that have been for decades saying that the standard model, particularly the relativistic model, is deeply, deeply flawed, I suspect that they achieved some sort of torsion effect with those just gigantic counter-rotating magnetic fields. You have to have achieved a torsion effect. That's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they encountered. They got a result that was probably much like what the Nazis were getting out of their Bell device during World War II, only amplified way, way, way beyond anything that even the Bell had ever achieved.
Now,
I think that sent them back to the drawing board.
Okay, and do you think that is that why they are so-called, I guess blaming in one way the current, because basically CERN is keep breaking down all the time. They say this keeps stopping, things
yeah.
are happening with it. They never get it to function properly. I mean, one time
yes.
they even claimed there was a piece of bread from a bird dropped into the magnet. like ridiculous stuff like that.
Jeez.
And I'm just wondering, because we had Danish physicist with us on the program called Holger Beck-Nielsen from the Niels Bohr Institute
yeah, uh-huh.
in Copenhagen, and he discussed some of his theories about this, and he actually had a wild theory that goes outside of the standard model, which suggested basically that the device is actually being sabotaged from the future. This may sound really strange and really weird, but that first time that you uh-huh. mentioned when it actually was fired up, is it potential that they actually tapped into something there that now is one way or another is preventing it from actually being started up? Or do they realize that, wait a minute, we can actually redraw this stuff and actually make it into, I don't know, a time machine or something. What do you think is going
on
or happening right here?
Okay, yeah, all right. I, like you, am extremely suspicious of all the cover stories that they've been putting out as to why they keep starting up that thing and it keeps having to shut down.
Yeah.
All right. One very simple explanation for that is that if you're dealing with any model of the standard model of physics, any torsion result that you get from that is going to be way, way outside of the model's ability to predict. So in other words, you're dealing quite literally, in one sense, with a group of scientists that haven't a clue
what they're doing.
Looking at.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're trying to justify it all in terms of quark theory within quantum mechanics, and that simply is going to fail. The only aspect of quark theory that touches upon this is the fact that you're dealing with subatomic particles that are described in terms of their states of spin.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we're right back to that idea, all right? So I'm extremely suspicious of any of the public explanations as to why the Hadron Collider has been turned on and off so much.
Yes.
Again, the alternative physics papers are there. You need look no further, really, than Einstein's own papers from the 1920s to see that he himself was dissatisfied with general relativity and that he had reincorporated locally variable gravitational effects by means of torsion, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the important thing I want to emphasize here, and that you mentioned the book Secrets of the Unified Field. Well, that book is all about this, because if you go to the engineering papers of Gabriel Krohn, published in 1935, he specifically states that you can take these unified field theories and use them to explain the anomalies. This is so important. To explain the anomalies that electrical engineers encounter when they are dealing with, here it comes, large networked rotating electrical systems.
Okay.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
So now let's look again at what we have with the Hadron Collider. You have two extremely large circular magnets stacked one on top of each other, just like I rationalize in the Bell device, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Stacked one on top of each other, and they're counter-rotating, all right?
Okay.
And you're pumping enormous amounts of energy into these things and achieving this counter-rotation. Well, if you examine that very conceptual system, what you have is precisely an enormous torsion field generator. So quite literally, two things are possible with that, Henrik, and this is what I think they may have encountered. Remember that the Bell levitated. When the Nazis turned the thing on, it floated.
Yeah.
Okay? In other words, it was creating this torsion field, which basically gave it a little bubble around it that neutralized the local gravitational field of the Earth. All right.
Mm.
And again, this is falling out of all of these papers that are being published in the physics literature at the time. And Krohn comes along and says, this stuff is engineerable.
Mm.
That's the key.
Mm.
We don't need to have a large mass of a star or a planet to warp space-time. And the other thing then that means is that when they turn those magnets on down there in Switzerland, that thing could possibly have started to literally to pull away from its anchoring.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Anytime that happens, yeah, you're going to put extreme stresses on things like what? Coolant tanks.
Right.
That you haven't designed for those kinds of stresses because your engineers are being told what to design on the basis of the standard model of physics.
So if this thing is starting to lift, basically.
That's one effect. The other is if you recall from the Bell project,
mm-hmm.
one of the things that resulted in the field of the device was you had extreme time dilation to the extent that the molecular bonding structure of plants exposed to the field broke down completely and the plants decayed within a matter of a few hours to a few days, and they did so into a goo, and they did so without putrefaction.
Wow.
So in other words, this is an indicator that you're getting an extreme time dilation effect. And again, you know, that's all the way back to general relativity.
Yeah.
That's what relativity predicts. But it doesn't predict it in terms of rotating fields. In other words, in relativity, you're dealing only with a linear acceleration near to the velocity of light. It's in those later higher dimensional theories that come out in the 1920s and early 30s in Germany, that you're getting those kinds of effects falling out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And again, let's just look at some more circumstantial evidence. Who's the scientist in charge of the Bell Project? Well, it's Dr. Walter Gerlach. Gerlach, as you know, was fascinated with spinning magnetic fields, the effects that they might have on gravity. He corresponded for years with the Austrian physicist Hans Turing. And it was Turing who, in turn, on the basis of those conversations and on the basis of incorporating ideas like torsion into general relativity, predicted the frame-dragging effect of any satellite in orbit around Earth.
Okay.
All right?
Mm-hmm.
And again, without calculation of those effects, you cannot make the modern global positioning system, GPS, work.
Yeah, that's
you
right.
must incorporate those calculations because there is a satellite drag.
Mm.
All right?
Mm.
It's Gerlach that's in charge of this Bell project. So in other words, when they turned that thing on at CERN, Henrik, I think they got an extreme torsion effect that nowhere falls out of the standard theory, but that does fall out from all of these alternative theories that don't make it into the standard model of modern physics, but that are certainly there in terms of the theoretical papers, and even more importantly, certainly there in the engineering papers of Gabriel Crome.
Mm-hmm.
And they're there from the 1930s.
Hmm.
So yeah, you add all this together, you've got a chancellor of Germany who's a PhD in quantum chemistry, you've got this Norway spiral thing, you've got the nonsensical explanations for why they keep trying to turn that collider on and having to shut it down.
Yeah.
It's because, quite simply, they are having to, in my opinion, probably rethink the whole paradigm of physics by which they are thinking they're going to test certain things in that device. They're not testing those things. They're finding torsion effects, extreme ones.
Huh. Yeah.
Making sense?
Yeah, it's interesting because I wonder also if potentially some other, if this have resulted, I guess, in some other kind of effect. For instance, don't know if you're aware, Joseph, but there's been various strange sinkholes, I guess, appearing around the planet as well.
Yeah.
One in Germany, actually,
yes.
a few days ago, and then there was one in the Amazon, I think, one of the ports in Amazon. There just many
Guatemala.
Of these were shot, you know, on video camera as well. There's been strange cracks in Michigan. Again, I don't know if we
yes.
can tie all these things together, but it seems to me that something is kind of seems to be changing in terms of the physical laws in terms on the planet almost. What
yes,
do you make of that?
Yes.
Could that be a possibility here?
Yes. In fact, I think that in some of these cases, again, you are looking at the products of a technology that is being used. Take for example that sinkhole that appeared in Guatemala. Okay.
Mm.
Now, Henrik, everybody who's seen that picture, the news teams that went down there and showed that thing, this hole in the ground that goes straight down. Well, Henrik, you and I have probably seen lots of sinkholes in our lives. Did that look anything like your average, ordinary sinkhole to you?
No, way stranger. And the way everything was... No, it's something weird with it when I saw that footage. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what's weird with it. It looks exactly as if it had been bored by, you know, one of those plasma boring machines that the militaries of the world use to make their underground bunkers and bore tunnels and so on and so forth. That's exactly what it looks like because this thing is a perfect circle.
that's right.
It's in other words, my point is, it's the clear product of a technology.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
You don't have anybody there in that city in Guatemala that says, oh, we heard rumblings of machinery and then woke up the next day and we've got this big hole in the ground.
Yeah.
No, what you have there is the clear product of a technology. And it's a very, very sophisticated technology. And again, it's this torsion-based technology, I think, that you're looking at. And again, I think it's somebody saying, oh, looky to somebody else, what we can do with this stuff.
Yeah.
All right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And again, you know, I have not seen the one in Germany, but it's odd that, you know, one should appear there if my scenario that you've got you've got one side shooting at the other.
Yeah, that's
okay?
Right. Exactly.
Go back to the German reunification. What happened at that time? The Soviet Union experienced a succession of very devastating earthquakes in the Caucasus region and some cases in the southern Ukraine. You know, again, I think that these were products of technology. They are not accidental because, again, you need only go back to Tesla, to his whole concept of standing electrical waves within the earth and the means to create them. In other words, this has been around now for well over a century. Well over a century. So imagine what you can do with enough money and people investigating it all that time.
That's right.
Excuse me.
I guess the question as well, obviously, is where you think personally where this will go, if they're kind of just flexing their muscles at this point. I mean, we have different scenarios that could arise of this, depending on if one or the other side are willing or not to you know, work with the other part, basically. And if even in the extension, do you think personally that we will see a more if there is a, if we can call it that, kind of a fourth Reich, you know, arising out of the ashes of the third one through very different means? Will they ever become, you know, official in any way? Are they the one behind, you know, the one world government? What do you think is what was going to happen here with these factions?
Well, again, let's go back to what I said in the first hour. I think what we're witnessing in this scenario is we're witnessing the approach to the end game. Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay.
And as you approach the end game, a funny thing begins to happen. The alliances and coalitions that have cooperated in order to get there begin to break down because each faction wants to be the dominant party. Yeah. And this is exactly what I think is happening. I think you are witnessing as much the breakdown of this wonderful, glorious New World Order as you are witnessing its implementation. Because it's now, you know, if I'm correct in my readings of these things, particularly those earthquakes in which you had damped inertial effects that didn't affect anybody else, that's clearly a technological signature. Mm. Can't be anything else. Mm. So if you're looking at that, then you're looking at a real shooting war. And, you know, I'm gonna tell your listeners to go to Richard Hoagland's website, enterprisemission.com, and on there he has a paper on the Norway Spiral. It's in the second part of the Norway Spiral that he discusses and cites something that I wrote in a private letter to him, and he published it with my permission on the website, that you have the same clear technological signatures at work in the destruction of the Twin Towers on 9/11 in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I can say that with absolute confidence is that the other so-called 9/11 truth theory explanations or the airplane fuel theory explanations do not account for the utter lack of 500,000 tons of concrete and steel that should have smashed into the ground. They do not account for the fact that you have strangely toasted cars 2 miles in New York City from the site of Ground Zero.
That's right.
You can go online and find pictures of these cars and the strange ways in which supposedly they burned. Okay.
That's right. Yeah.
Now, what you've got when you look at those pictures is you've got resonance effects of interfered electromagnetic fields. That's precisely what you're looking at.
Yeah.
That's why one part of the car completely melts and the other part stays perfectly pristine. That's exactly what you have. You've got the responses of some of the first responders that you have to read in order to believe some of the things that they're saying. One guy talks about literally being lifted up and propelled a block down the street there in Manhattan and then set back down, you know, as if he'd been scooped up.
Yeah.
And carried somewhere. Well, again, you're dealing there with effects of standing electromagnetic waves. That's precisely what you're dealing with. There is no other way. Forget about thermite, forget about charges in the building, forget about all of this nonsense that they are using to try and cover up the fact that if you look at all the evidence, you're looking at the clear signals of a very sophisticated technology. And I think, in terms of this scenario, that you are looking at a, so to speak, the opening shot in this war.
again, in 2001 with the destruction of the towers?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And my reasons for saying so, you know, I have a lot more reasons for saying that, and you can go on Mr. Hoagland's website and read the section of the paper that I wrote for him that he cites there, all right?
Mm.
So, yeah, you're looking, I think, at the beginning of the breakdown of that detente there, okay? In other words, I'm saying something different from the official explanation, which is that there's one level of conspiracy involved with radical Muslims flying airplanes into buildings, all right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then you've got the 9/11 truthers who are saying there's another deeper level of a radical element within the government that is, you know, allowed this to happen or may have been involved in the planning in order to project American power into the Middle East, yada, yada, yada,
right,
all right?
Right.
You've got that school of thought. I'm saying that there is a yet deeper third layer to all of this. There is a hidden player that was at work in the whole thing. In other words, you've got an operation within an operation within an operation. And in order to see who the third player is, you have to look at the technological signatures, and then you have to look at those nations that were giving the United States clear intelligence warnings that something was going to happen that week,
yeah,
in this country. And there were only three nations whose intelligence services warned us about that.
Germany?
Yes. Bingo. Right. Bingo. Yeah. Our good old friends, the Bundesnachrichtendienst. And whose intelligence operation was that?
You know? Yeah.
So again, yeah, you go back and piece the pieces together. And yeah, you're getting a very clear picture. And the amazing and frightening thing, Henrik, is when you do it and analyze it that way, you're getting a consistent picture.
Mm.
Any other attempt to read the events of that day with hidden players involved, you know, you listen to Alex Jones, you listen to Dr. Stephen Jones, you listen to these people,
mm.
And they clearly sense that there is some entity involved that they cannot put a finger on.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So they cast about for the standard explanations. Oh, it was Israel, or oh, it was American neoconservatives, or, you know, what have you. They mm-hmm. come up with these explanations mm-hmm. that make no sense, because they make no sense out of the political data, and they make no sense especially out of the technological data at those two towers.
You, I understand that many different factions of, you know, within all the different groups who are, or, you know, trying to gain control over the world, are trying
right.
to use these kinds of events to their own for their own purposes. You know, to
right.
further,
yes.
you know, progress their own agenda. So I understand that that's
right.
there. But the interesting here thing that you mentioned is obviously the physical data that we have in terms of what actually happened,
right.
And I'm looking through a little bit here quickly as well on Hoagland's site, enterprisemission.com, where also I see a lot of some of the material there is reference to some of the work that Judy Wood has been doing on
yes,
the towers
exactly
as well, right. So
yes, yes,
that's interesting.
Yes, if you want to look at all of this evidence, almost I would say, in toto, Dr. Wood, she has collected over the last 10 years just an enormous, enormous amount, and largely in the form of pictures from the various news agencies that were there, from various people that were present that day. She has assiduously scoured through the National Institute of Standards Board's interviews of the witnesses, the mm. first responders, and you know, she's posted all of this on her website.
Mm.
And you know, to really get the effect of what she is saying, you know, she's not saying particularly what kind of physics is involved in the technology that did it. She is simply pointing out that no other model works to explain
right,
all
right.
of this.
Because
that's
there is
what she's saying.
There is a hurricane involved in this as well. That was
yes, there was
Erin or something, if I
yes.
remember that correctly.
Why?
Yeah.
Let me point out why she's talking about that. Because what makes this stuff work is you have to have two essential conditions. You have to have a very strong local static field, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And that you would get from those kinds of effects, all right? The second thing you need is interfered rotating electromagnetic fields inside of that static field. That's exactly what you need. That's what gives you the strange resulting effects that so many people comment on in tornadoes. That, you know, it has nothing to do with all the nonsense that you hear on public television or the History Channel or Discovery Channel, that this is all due to strange aerodynamic effects and vacuums and so on and so forth. No, it's the static field and a rotating interfered electromagnetic field that's taking place.
In other words, right? What you're saying is that those kinds of pictures where we can see a bike lodged into a tree, but we can't
see
weird effects that
arising. Because remember, Henrik, remember what you heard about the stories about the Philadelphia experiment. What did you have?
That's right, a man
you had the same thing
into the deck.
But you had nowhere present in any version of the stories of that experiment did you have high wind, did you?
No, not as far as I
But what do you have? You have degaussing cables, all right, around a ship that are coiled on the three axes of the ship. They turn on, they create a static field, all right, and then they're pulsed.
Yeah.
So you've got the same exact conditions that is creating those effects. You've got the same principles at work in the Bell device, rationalized, you know, perfectly.
Yeah.
You know, leaving, you know, as the Germans are wont to do, leaving no stone unturned, quite literally. But, you know, you're dealing with signature effects of exactly the same conceptual stuff that have been obviously then brought to an extreme technological sophistication.
Right. And so things like, you know, there's talk of, for instance, geoengineering now in terms of, you know, chemtrails and all that as well. That would be part of it, but in one sense, that's nothing, potentially nothing compared to what they already have. If they can do stuff like this, you know, create sinkholes or knock down buildings or even earthquakes, obviously, as well here.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, remember something that I said, I think it was in our first interview. This is a tremendously unified physics, all right?
Mm.
And therefore, it will result in a tremendously unified technology. Because remember what I said, I think it was the second time we interviewed, if you look at the Nazi Bell device, if you look at the departments of the SS that are involved with it, the Germans were after three things by means of a gateway technology. They were after a so-called free energy technology, or to be more explicit, a zero-point energy technology. They were after a technology that would give them a form of practical field propulsion.
Mm-hmm.
And the final thing, of course, Nazis being Nazis, is they're after a weapon. And all three things, all three configurations fall out from that physics. You can use it to manipulate weather systems, because what are extreme weather systems? They are electrically dynamic systems.
Yeah.
All right, that's, you need go no further than that, and there's your potential.
Yeah.
These systems can create electromagnetic standing waves in the earth, and again, there's your earthquakes.
That's right.
All you need figure out, and again, it has to be done by, to a certain extent, by brute force trial and error, you know, by observation, by experiment. But once you've got enough data down, then yeah, you can pretty much turn on the switch and target anywhere you want. Because again, the targeting, let's go back to what I said in the first interview, the targeting of these kinds of weapons is done by means of two things: interference of beams, of waves, and harmonic resonance effects.
Yeah. Can all of this be attributed to HARP, ASCAT, or maybe then the CERN facility, or are there others out there that are more specific that you know of, or that you've heard about, or that maybe they're even building or in the process of developing?
Oh boy, what a wonderful question. I believe it's entirely possible. If you look at the way that HARP is constructed, you have or the European version of it, you have a field of phased array radio antennas, right? And the whole point of a phased array antenna is that you beam signals from each antenna slightly out of phase with the signals that you're beaming from other signals or from other antenna, and what that out of phase does is it shapes the signal itself from the entire array so that you can bend the signal. This is this is the basis of over the horizon radars. It's the basis of so much. But with that said, it's entirely possible then that you can bend the signal, twist it, so to speak, quite literally, into certain shapes. You know, just look again at the Norway spiral.
Yeah.
You have, again, a signal that's being bent to create a particular torsion field effect. And the result was no more Russian missile.
<You
know>?
Right.
somebody in Berlin is sending clear messages to somebody in Moscow. You know?
Mm-hmm.
You can have all of your missiles that you want, by golly. but you know, the Reich is good and secure. it's entirely possible that you can take HARP or the European version and do these things with it.
Yeah.
But the other part of your question is, has the technology gone beyond that? Well, yes, and there's a clear reason why. Already at the beginning of the HARP project, you have publicly available patents. Now, the U.S. government doesn't declassify anything until it's got something better up its sleeve.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, you can say the same of any of the governments of the other major powers in the world, so you know darn good and well that Germany's got something else up their sleeve if they're willing to give these little public demonstrations of what everybody knows there in Europe exists.
Yeah, yeah,
okay? Yeah. And you know, it's the same with every other European nation. I know Sweden is involved with that project. Well,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
this means that these European nations have, you know, if they're willing to reveal this and what we can do with this, then imagine what else they've got that they're not talking about.
I know that they are updating the IceCat facility basically as we speak. They're going to develop something called 3D, and the European Commission actually just granted them.
Ain't that interesting?
It's very, very interesting because, they've been granted 4.5 million euros for the initial start of this, obviously. And again, we don't know how much black ops money or the old money, so to speak, are being put into this development as well. But what do you, have you looked into the 3D phase, the development of IceCat? I tried to read some of those papers and things like that, and it's very scientific. The language is somewhat difficult. I think I got a little bit of a grasp in terms of what they could potentially do when they heat up the atmosphere, in terms of actually creating something which is more like a three-dimensional model instead of a two-dimensional. But what do you know about that, Joseph?
Well, I don't, to be quite honest with you, no, I was unaware that they are doing this. So, after the show, send me some links to those papers, and I'll take a look at them.
Will
because
do.
That interests me a great deal.
Yes.
But just in terms of putting it that way, in other words, they're thinking of performing these experiments now by adding yet another dimensionality to them, all right?
Mm.
That to me is very interesting because clearly you had to have some sort of ability to do that, to be able to create that spiral in the beginning in the first place. So in other words, you may have been looking at a proof of concept experiment taking place there, and they just so happened to pick a day when they knew the Russians would be firing off one of their missiles, and we just so happened to have created this thing right in the path of your missile, and oh, by the way, you know, we're so sorry your missile went haywire. So, you know, how many coincidences do we need here?
I think that's
definitely working into this means that they're upgrading it for something, and that means, again, they've already done the proof of concept experiments, and they've got something better in the wings that they haven't shown everybody.
Yeah, that's right. So, again, if we try to draw out some more information or discuss some of the things that has to do with where this technology is going. I mean, in one way, it could be kind of, we could say that, okay, they're just in the initial steps, perhaps. Uh-huh. They're experimenting. They're, again, flexing their muscle in one way or another. They're trying to figure out exactly what this kind of technology can do and how much, you know, more power, I guess, they need in one way as well. But what do you believe personally is the goal of this? Are we talking about a technology that can, you know, open wormholes, take them off world, off planet, a different method of interstellar space travel, or, I mean, maybe even all of these, maybe this kinds of physics will lead to so many different things. But what do you make of this, Joseph?
Well, I think it's interesting that you phrased your question in around the concept of the wormhole, because a wormhole in standard physics models is incredibly tiny. I mean, it's a billion times tinier than tiny. Okay.
Yeah, right.
And it takes an enormous amount, the energy to open one up is called the Schwarzschild limit, and it's an enormous amount of energy. And even if you opened one, you really couldn't, so to speak, shove anything through it, because, like I say, it's a billion times tinier than tiny.
Yeah.
You again are phrasing the question in terms of the standard model, but this is the interesting thing I point out in Secrets of the Unified Field. If you look at the papers that are examining torsion in the 1930s, torsion can achieve exactly what these wormholes achieve, and they are not subject to the constraints of size of wormholes, and moreover, they are not circumscribed by the same energy constraints as wormholes.
Mm-hmm.
So, in other words, I think one possibility that you're looking at there is that they are experimenting off the books with this stuff. What's the purpose? I think we go back to the Nazi Bell. The purpose is to acquire a practical technology for the manipulation of the vacuum energy.
Mm.
Secondly, for a practical field propulsion. Now, personally, I think that they've already got this stuff. Okay?
Mm.
So, in my mind, I think what they're looking for is the third one. They're looking for the weapon, and they're looking for a means of countering it. And that, to me, is probably the most important one, because my word, Henrik, the Nazis had this stuff in a working device. This is now known.
Yeah.
In a working device in 1944. It was a prototype device that they couldn't use to fly around. They couldn't build it big enough to have any practical weapons application, but nonetheless, the results that they were getting from it were stunning enough that part of the entire manipulation of the end of the war on their part was so that they could get that stuff and the scientists running it out of Europe and down to Latin America.
Mm-hmm.
So they've had, whoever's been continuing this now, we've had now, 65 years, somewhere in there, since the end of the war, and then the continuation of that project in Argentina. So who knows what they've achieved with it in that amount of time. So I think putting yourself in the position now of the governments of the world and all of these strange things that are clear signatures that someone is using this stuff right here on planet Earth right now, that one of the goals is, if they haven't themselves got this stuff, then they have to figure out a way to defend against it.
Mm.
So as far as Europe is concerned, I think that would probably be uppermost in their mind.
Well, so in one way, then, for all we know, the money that we talked about earlier in terms of bailouts, yeah, and you know, the other sinkhole, you know, so to speak, where all this money went down, could actually be going to funding the other side of the government here, not the banksters of Babylon, but the other crowd. In other words, they don't go out and tell anybody what is going on, but they do find different ways in order to create finance for these kinds of projects so that themselves can build up infrastructure,
yes, absolutely,
devices, research, technology, etc., in order to try to combat this. It's very
absolutely. Excuse me, absolutely. This is the reason why, you know, in spite of all the populist moves around the world in various nations to legalize this stuff, that you have adamant resistance to it, because it's a source of almost virtually unlimited funding for these people,
yeah,
for their black operations, their black research projects, and so forth. Because why? That money is not subject to any sort of governmental oversight. They can use that stuff to fund all sorts of fun, you know, all sorts of fun activities, and they do.
Right.
And, you know, that's why that book by Henrik Kruger is so very important. And, you know, the book barely made a dent over here in the United States when it was published,
mm-hmm,
but when it was published in Europe, it created something of a sensation, you know, because it was a very popular book over there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's worth getting to read simply because of its implications.
Hmm. That's interesting. And, you know, still it goes back to that idea that it's, for me personally, it's strange that these kinds of people still need money, you know, to operate and to do their stuff, to get their, you know, machines built or things developed. But
I see what you're saying. Yeah, I
guess
me,
this is the way they're doing it. This is the way they chose to, you know.
It's not only the way they're doing it, it's the scale of it, Henrik.
Mm-hmm.
It's
right.
The scale.
Right.
The scale suggests that there is something huge in the works that they are either planning to do or frantically scrambling to prevent. That's the only way I can read it. The scale of things is too big. And the only thing I can think of is somebody is feeling a gun to their head.
Mm.
Somebody is feeling a gun to their head.
Hmm. Yeah, and that could be could we be talking about off world threat here or
yes, absolutely. You know, I'm not restricting this. Don't get me wrong. Just because my focus is on this factional infighting, that if you, so to speak, know how to read the tea leaves,
mm-hmm,
and if you're aware of the signatures of this kind of physics and the history of who's been investigating it for the last 100 to 120 years. If you look at it only that way, I think you've only got a part of the clue. I definitely think, on the basis of things that have been slowly leaking out of the European Space Agency, of NASA, even the Russians, I do think there is an aspect of this that is off-world.
Mm.
Clearly,
because
it's
when you talk about this, it alludes to some of the things almost that you describe in cosmic war.
Yes, exactly. That's my point.
It's an attempt, perhaps, to try to rebuild some of this technology that we had in the past, right? So.
It's an attempt to rebuild it, and in addition to that, I think in the process of rebuilding it, let's go back and remember what this stuff really is. This stuff manipulates standing waves in the physical medium itself, all right?
Mm.
That's what it does. That's the ultimate basis of the power that comes out of this physics, of the power that comes out of this technology. A standing wave in the medium, however, is it's a longitudinal pulse. In other words, it's not a Hertz wave moving along at the Pony Express speeds of the velocity of light.
Mm.
Okay. This is why publicly they keep pushing Einstein as, you know, the final infallible word in physics.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And off on the side, you've got all of these papers by Ives, by experiments by Sagnac, and so on and so forth, that clearly indicate that the results of special relativity, the constancy of the velocity of light in all inertial fields, is wrong.
Yeah.
Okay?
Mm.
If it's wrong, it opens up a lot of other possibilities, not the least of which is this idea of a standing longitudinal wave in the medium itself that is much, much faster than a standard Hertz wave of electromagnetic energy. You know, I use the analogy of a jump rope and a ruler. If you jerk a loose jump rope that's suspended between two people, you create a sine wave, all right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the waveform that electromagnetic energy that we get from our light bulbs, from our lasers, everything else, that's the kind of energy you're dealing with.
Yeah.
If you suspend a ruler between two people and one person pushes the ruler, all of that energy is instantly transferred to the person at the other end of it.
That's
a standing wave in the medium.
All right. Yeah.
So now let's pretend we've got ET out there somewhere, or our ancient genetic cousins, or whoever,
mm-hmm.
all right? And let's say that they have access to this kind of physics, that they, you know, they long ago figured this out. If we start tinkering around with it down here on Earth, what does that do? That sends out a pulse, a standing wave in the longitudinal waveform in the medium. Someone out there is going to hear it, so to speak.
Right. They will pick up
on the
signature.
And they might find out, you know. Yeah, and, you know, if we take those ancient records that this is a genetic cousin, that they might still be around,
that
they might know that we're a very cantankerous group and it was bad enough that we have hydrogen bombs, but now we've got this stuff. yeah, I'd show up in a heartbeat. You know? We better find out what the cousins are going to be up to with this stuff.
Yeah,
so, I don't discount that possibility at all.
So that, in one way, kind of potentially ties in the craze, if you will, that has been in the mainstream media lately in terms of announcing ET presence, and in some way or another
Bingo.
Exactly.
They're gearing up for something, Henrik. I mean, my word. Everybody that has a space technology infrastructure on this planet right now has announced they're going to the moon, all right?
Mm.
The only ones that seem completely uninterested in doing so, almost as if we're afraid to do it, is us.
Because you've been there before.
Either because we've been there before or we've been warned off.
Right, yeah.
Because, you see what I'm saying? Everybody else is planning to go back.
Yeah. Yeah, because...
If the Russians don't do it, rest assured, Henrik, you and Europe will. And if you guys don't do it, the Chinese will. And if the Chinese don't, the Japanese will.
And the Indians
even Brazil wants
will.
To get in on
yeah.
the mix.
Everyone is jumping onto that one.
Everyone is gearing up their space programs, except who?
United States.
Yeah. I think incidentally that's going to change.
Hmm.
I think it's going to change very suddenly and very dramatically.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's interesting.
To be blunt, it's the only bipartisan thing that the United States has left that these dummy crooks and Republicans can probably agree on. And it will do, you know, that they can actually create jobs for people actually making stuff here.
Yeah, well, exactly,
and,
of course.
And reaping a huge technological benefit for the country in the meantime.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the cost-benefits ratio for the Apollo program are staggering. They're almost incalculable.
Mm.
You know, we got a lot more out of it than just a bunch of rocks.
Oh, obviously, of course.
Yeah, well, obviously, of course we did.
Yeah.
Of course we did. And that, you know, I think that's another reason that people, the other space powers in the world, are so intent on going to the moon.
Yeah.
Because, you know, their own probes have shown them this stuff now, and hey.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I mean, that theory about being warned off, though, is unless, you know, we grant the theory that, you know, they never went to the moon.
No, I don't subscribe to that.
And you don't? No. Then the other one is the only one that makes sense to me that you mentioned, that there'd been somebody being warned off, because again, why wouldn't they return after 65 years?
Well, I think Mr. Hoagland's take is correct. We went there in full knowledge that we were going there to reconnoiter, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Right.
And recover. And that, you know, it was called off quite simply because it was mission accomplished.
But he also then, I mean, in terms of the Dark Mission book that, you know, we've discussed with Hoagland and Mike Barr as well on the program, to me would imply that the Babylon's banksters are behind that particular space trip up there as well, correct?
Well, yes, but you must remember something else that Mr. Hoagland says, and that is that there are clear indicators that by the time the moon landings actually took place, that the ones who are the most influential group inside of NASA, especially in terms of mission planning, are the Nazis.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
And again, you know, The reason I don't think that this is all a hoax is simply the presence of people like Dr. Davis in the Apollo program.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because, again, if you look at the physics signatures, where the hoaxers are getting it wrong is they're looking at these signatures, particularly the LEMs taking off from the moon, and they're saying, well, that can't be a rocket. And they're saying, therefore, this is all just done as kind of a soundstage TV production make-believe,
mm-hmm,
all right?
Mm-hmm.
Because, and they're right in one sense, in that it is not the signature of a rocket, what you see happen.
Exactly, because they're using something else.
But yeah. What they're discounting is that it is a clear signature of an alternative technology in play.
Yeah, yeah.
And von Braun let the cat out of the bag on that one by giving that stupid interview to Time magazine 2 weeks after the moon landing. And, you know, he says, oh, by the way, you know, the neutral point of gravity between the Earth and the moon is 43,500 miles from the surface of the moon. Oh, it is? Well, gee, thanks, Dr. von Braun. You know, that explains why we had so many problems with all of those early probes. Run the Newtonian calculations. If the Newtonian 1/6 gravity of mass of the Earth is correct for the moon, then the neutral point should be about 23,000 miles from the surface of the moon.
Okay.
So in other words, we're dealing with a much more massive body than we have been told.
Hmm. Interesting.
That would account then for why all of our Newtonian calculations for those early space probes went so completely haywire.
Right.
I mean, the Russians were missing it by 4,000 or 5,000 miles or crashing probes into it.
Okay, yeah.
But if that's also the case, then that dinky little rocket on the LEM ain't going to be enough to get you off the moon once you get on it.
Hmm.
There's Dr. Davis. That's why he's there.
Yeah. Huh.
That's why he's there.
Very, very interesting.
Because remember what I said when we had that interview on that subject. This man isn't even a rocket scientist at all.
Right.
Why is he a flight administrator for the program then?
Exactly.
Exactly. Exactly. What's his specialty? Oh, golly. Just happens to be rotating electromagnetic fields, high voltage current discharge and measurement, and plasmas. Okay.
So it's kind of a giveaway.
I mean, this... Huh?
It's kind of a giveaway then in that sense that
of course it is.
And another...
Of course it is.
Yeah, yeah. Hmm. So... What do you, if we begin to kind of wrap things up and
uh-huh.
and tie things together a little bit as well, and also I want to, there's one thing I want to ask you about, and that's Wernher von Braun's comment on the, you know, the uh-huh. ET threat and all that as well. He uh-huh. made that comment, and there's been other
yes.
people picking up on that. Do you think that a person like him can be trusted in the sense that yeah now he's
von Braun
for, yeah
well, or, do you think any Nazi could be trusted? Let me throw the question
see,
back.
See,
at
that's
you.
What I'm that's what I'm asking as well, and that's why I think it's so interesting that many people are referring to him when they bring up this idea that you know they talk about the ET threat potentially out there, and that
yes.
that aspect is all a scam, and they refer to what von Braun said in terms of what they will be using. And obviously,
yeah.
again, he was speaking, sure, of course, as an insider, but why would he change, you know, Did he change teams, or why did he want to? Why did he want to make that comment? Do you think, and what do you make of that comment?
Well, he made the comment to Dr. Carol Rosen, and she's the one that has actually. So, in other words, we're dealing with secondhand dead man's testimony. That's very important to realize.
Sure,
but
sure.
From the standpoint of who Dr. Rosen is and who she's been involved with and so on and so forth, I think, you know, it's a fairly trustworthy representation of conversations that she and he probably had.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what you may be dealing with, Henrik, with Von Braun's statement there, is that he knew about this game plan prior to ever coming to this country. Now, as to whether that means that he's describing a false flag operation or reality remains to be seen. I suspect personally it's a bit of both.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect it's a bit of both.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, we will.
We will see.
We will see. Yeah.
The reason I'm not inclined to distrust him completely is that when he made this comment, according to Dr. Rosen, when he made this comment, he was very near the end of his life, and he knew it. So, in other words, you know, we have the standard situation that there's nothing left to lose. Might as well spill the beans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm sure that Von Braun probably felt as if the beans that he was spilling were so fantastic, no one would believe it anyway.
Well, it took a few years, right? So.
Yeah, it took quite a few years, that's correct.
Yeah.
You know, but it wasn't the first time he said, you know, let's look on the other hand, it wasn't the first time in his career, long and checkered as it was, that he said some mighty strange things. I mean, you know, this man was as nutty of a Nazi as any of the rest of them. So,
right.
you know, he may have built the rocket that got us there, but on the other parts of his life, he was as nutty as the rest of them.
Well, it remains to be seen, just as you say, Joseph, and we will, you know, keep watching all the things in terms of, you know, the development of some of these areas. Obviously, we will see what would happen with
yep.
CERN, how IceCat develops. We'll see
yep.
if anything at all happens in terms of this whole, you know, ET craze that have been going on in the mainstream media lately, and see
yeah.
where that goes. And I think that we should, invite you back and have you back on the program sooner than, 3 years as it was last time.
3 years, yeah.
So,
it would be my pleasure, Henry.
It would be great to have you back, because, again, there's so much material here and so many interesting aspects. And again, then I want to mention here that we've been talking about many of your books, obviously tying in kind of them all together in one way. But the most recent books you have out there, Babylon's Banksters, The Philosopher's mm-hmm. Stone. And then obviously as well, we have the latest one on the ET Roswell incident as well. What was the title again of that one?
The title of that one is Roswell and the Reich. That's the one the UFO ET people are really pissed off about.
They
don't even want to talk about that one.
Well, you know what? I'm going to get a copy of that one, and then we'll invite you back and we can see what they're so
sure.
upset about. That would be interesting. But there's other books as well out there, obviously. The Giza Death Star series, The Reich of the Black
right.
Sun, SS Brother of the Bell, The Cosmic War, Secrets of the Unified Field, and many others. We urge people to go to Amazon.com, type in Joseph P. Farrell as author there, or simply go to our site, of course, and check the links that we'll provide to the books and to Joseph's own website, GizaDeathStar.com. It's been very good and interesting and fun to have you back, Joseph. So thank you for your time.
It's fun for me to be here, Henry.
Excellent. And let's definitely do it sooner again here then.
All righty. Thank you much.
All right, folks. That's our program for this time. We'll be back with more radio before you know it. New and exciting guests and topics are lined up. Feel free to drop us your topic or guest suggestion as well, of course. Keep an eye on the website for the latest. My thanks to Fredrik, Lana, Elizabeth, and of course to you for listening and for staying with us as a member. Take good care. We'll talk more soon. Bye-bye.